although I've known Jimmy as a friend for a long time, and we keep crossing paths when a piece of work has to be done or is completed. There's a poem by T.S. Eliot that goes, "Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights and one-night cheap hotels and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells. Oh, do not ask, what is it? Let us come, let us go and make our visit. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo." And then he goes on, "Yellow smoke that rubs its back upon the window panes, yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes." And right at the end of the poem, he says, "And these the work of hands and days, of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate." And in reading these photographs, they open up with an image of a hand that lifts and drops a question mark on your plate. The hand is one of the oldest symbols in Western European art, from Albrecht Dürer's praying hands through to the creation with Adam and God's fingers just about to touch in Michelangelo, referred to in the poem. And you mentioned a second ago, these almost look like paintings, like still lives, like a kind of interior Vermeer. To come straight to the point though, and the sawdust restaurants without the oyster shells in Istanbul, these are the more barren places where a thought might grow. I thought I'd start off, Jimmy, by asking you, you're from Ballymena, and you talk in the introduction to this book about Istanbul being a city where religious fundamentalism, Islam, meets global consumerism. Did growing up in Ballymena prepare you for these two?
Well, I think of it as an apprenticeship, really. It's like, but it's the opposite pole, but it's a very similar thing. Like, as a boy in Ballymena, you really can't get away from that. It's fine. And you go through periods of loving it and hating it, and also the consumerism where you have this like almost like a nostalgia for the old sweetie shops and things like that, and then they're replaced by supermarkets. So all this thing is really out there, but on a bigger scale and in an opposite pole. And I think whether you like it or not, when you're from somewhere like Ballymena, it's like, I always remember the analogy of you cut you in half, you're like a stick of rock with Ballymena going right through it. It's like, it's there. You can't, whether you like it or not, it's there. So as you get older, you learn to use that and take from that. And that's what I'm doing now, and I love it. You know, it's like, one of the things I do some quirky things when I come home. I'm doing a lot of still lifes now. I love to go around the charity shops here and actually find old Bibles, you know, and there's people writing things in them, and they're like beautiful objects, you know, whereas years ago you'd have maybe went, oh no, I don't want that. So when you go away to a place like Istanbul and you see it's very, very fundamental Islamic and very, very different than Christianity, but there's something similar about the places that they're very much come out of that, and it's part of it as well. So it was a very good apprenticeship for me, certainly. But the Ballymena thing comes to the fore when you're not here. When you're here, it just mixes in. But I talked the other day about that, and there's qualities we have here about like thranness, and you need them qualities if you're wanting to take pictures of people very close. And whenever somebody says you're not allowed in there, you need that like quality of thranness, quality of perseverance, you know, to actually get the thing done.
Is your photography a form of a thrift shop? My granny used to say, if it can't be used, I mean, in a strange kind of way, these people who make poems, who make photographs in an outhouse in their back shed to tinker and footer are a form of poet, artist. When my granny's door latch was broken, my uncle found a bicycle clip in the back shed with a swatch of leather and spring-loaded the latch for the door. And in a very early poem I'd written, this, that, except spring-loaded together, a metaphor appears. What I was trying to suggest is, you know, when my granny said, if it can't be used in 7 years, then throw it out, it was put by for a kind of reuse. But are these photographs in a way of saving? I quoted Eliot, mm-hmm. and I was saying, look, these fragments we have shored against our ruin, are these photographs a way of retrieving something that would have been lost from our normal way of looking at the world mm-hmm. and freezing them in time for a future viewer?
Yeah, well, in a way, it's a very personal thing for me. Like, first of all, I do the pictures for me first. Sometimes if somebody says, I like it, I love it, or I don't like it, it doesn't mean much to me because it's for me first. But I'm also in love with old things and like collecting old things. And it's very much about, we were talking about that this morning, Jane, about like people from here are like hoarders, you know. People don't throw things out here. And I learned that in Istanbul. If you go to a city like Istanbul, I go to a lot of houses where people are leaving the houses and they don't take anything with them. They leave their personal items, personal pictures. It's a nomadic culture, whereas we're automatically like hoarding things in a way in general. But there is this cultural shift to everything's disposable. You know, like if you go to IKEA, you know, and like your cooker, your washing machine doesn't last for more than 2 years. Whereas the older generations, they had to do that. They had to make do. Like I was doing a series of still lifes lately and I wanted them to be different. And I was, my father's Alzheimer's now, he doesn't even know me, but they say to put together a little book. And I wanted to do it a bit different. So I was trying to get objects, like you're saying, that you would throw out and put them with the pictures of him or my mum or whatever and do a family album that way. And I ended up doing, he told me one time for Christmas he got an orange, you know. Imagine giving somebody an orange for Christmas now. So that generation had to make do. They had to use bicycle clips and all. But I think now we've gone too far the other way. But I'm still got one foot in that. For me, objects have a life, a history, a story. They bring something to me. But this isn't always seen by people. Especially younger people don't see that, you know. People like this here don't see anything at all. Sorry, it's okay, yeah. Yeah. So really, it is like a thrift shop. I love that, but it's very hard to find now. Very hard to find things. Uh-huh. Either people sell things on eBay or they keep them. But the younger generation dump everything. Everything's dumped. And the photographs, for me, are a way of keeping things.
Sure. A recent interview with a poet from the north here, he was asked a question about objects. He said, the problem that all image makers have with objects is that we love objects, but they always fail to love us back in return. and he was basically saying that, you know, that nest of tables that you found in the furniture store or that standard lamp or whatever it is you're materially attached to, you've invested a huge amount of yourself and a huge amount of your own security and identity in. But these things, we're really, as Leonard Cohen put it, we're only passing through. Mm-hmm. And I wonder just how much there is of a danger in photography and poetry in the sense that the poem and the photograph is then in itself only passing through. Mm. Like we're sitting here very, very well healed and these photographs are of dirt poor. You mm-hmm. call Istanbul an empire of dirt.
Yeah.
To what extent do you think these fragments hold on to these things, or to what extent are they, you know, is there a danger in these photographs? We're very well healed sitting here. These people are dirt poor.
These
interiors are falling to bits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Are we just voyeurs looking in on this?
Well, I think we are. I see a beauty in the interiors, you see. Certainly the people, it's a very misfortunate thing. And I used in the catalogue a little quote from Albert Camus, because a lot of people say, well, you shouldn't photograph somebody lying in the street there. You shouldn't do this. But Camus says, actually, a lot of people don't want to look at people like that because it's like a guilt. They have a guilt. It's like a lot of the charities now target middle class areas because of that guilt to raise money. So I think instead of walking past somebody or something, I think to photograph them, bring awareness to it. Whether it changes it or not, I'm not too sure. It's something I think in a longer term, sometimes it can change some. There was a famous story of a man, William Allard, he took pictures for National Geographic, and he photographed a shepherd boy crying at the side of the road, and because all his sheep had been killed by a lorry had hit them. And people wrote into National Geographic, you shouldn't be showing pictures like that. But actually what happened is there was like, I think $500,000 went to the little boy and he got a whole new, you know, it actually changed the perception of it and it brought things to it. But I don't do it for that reason. I think I'm trying to show basically the reality. Because if you go to Istanbul and people in the street, if you ask a tour guide, say, oh, there's no homeless people here. Before the Syrians came last year, there was 10,000 homeless and 40% of them are women. And you can't really avoid them. So I'm trying to really redress the official line. And also I was totally appalled, it's very personal again, the interiors, the historic interiors. I love history and I love these places. And whenever you go in and you see them and they're beautiful, and then you go back and a week later and there's a car park, you go, hold on a minute, like, what happened there? So I'm trying to really keep I don't want it to be passed, I want to keep it going.
Sure.
And it is like poetry for me.
Yeah.
Like poetry and painting and writing, they're all the same thing. They're all about seeing, but it's how you express that, really, I suppose, in a way.
Are you a political photographer? There's photographs up here of Trotsky's house.
Yeah,
that if you hadn't photographed that house, we wouldn't have, I don't think. I mean, I remember when you told me you've kind of found Trotsky's house and you were describing the interior and how it was crumbling and how difficult it was to get in there and how you kind of wanted to preserve that.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a sense, you took photographs around this area, way out in kind of the rural sort of crumbling cottages here of maybe an old woman's house with the bed stacked and her kind of note left after she died for the milkman and the bread man and... you know, a whole story of someone's life no longer there, kind of ghost life.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm putting to you here is this a kind of photography of the, like George Orwell, Down and Out in Paris and London, I am going to expose poverty because the Western European capitalism has suppressed, it's undeclared it. It's buried.
I know what you mean. Well, I'm a bit of a old socialist left, I suppose, in a way, but I'm not really political. Again, it goes back to I love the stories that people leave behind, and I find it amazing that nobody really cares. Like there was that old woman out in Newton Crumlin, and when I went in the house, I realised she lived in this house in the 1990s, and she had no electric, she had no toilet, she had no water. She used to go 4 or 5 miles for a bucket of water. And that house, the farmer bought the land and he just bought the house on it. And she went in the hospital and died, never came back. When I went in years later, her washroom was above the stove. Above the stove, her pool was there. You know, there was letters to people. And this was a whole life. So to me, you know, it was about... I found it as nobody really interested, but then I photographed all them things, had a show, had a little book. The book went out, and actually the relatives of the woman saw the house and the letter, and they went, they emailed me and said, that's my whatever great aunt or something, and they told me stories about what happened. So all of a sudden, you know, it's like being a writer in a way, you're piecing together a jigsaw, and you're finding a story that nobody really thought about or cared about. So for me, it's that fascination with that. With the Trotsky thing, it was all about an incredible story to me that nobody was interested in. Like he was, his whole family were being assassinated. They wiped them all out except the grandson. His daughter committed suicide when he was there. He was burnt out a few times. And he was in exile. And this was somebody that actually was one of the architects of the Bolshevik Revolution. Credible, powerful man at a time. Brought right down to this level, being somewhere where he had to take stock of his life. And, you know, when I seen the houses and the things in them and they're lying there and nobody was interested, I went, wow. You know, sort of like was like, good grief. So I got stuck in and I did it for the sheer love of it, you know. But then later it becomes something else. Like there was a man who did an article for a Turkish historical magazine. He took one of my pictures to Trotsky's grandson, who's the only survivor. He's an old man now in Mexico. And I found out what happened to Trotsky. You know what happened to Trotsky?
No.
After he was assassinated, they put his ashes in a little tomb outside his the place in Mexico. Students, for a prank, took the ashes out and made cookies out of them and sold them on eBay. It's just unbelievable. Like, you know, it's completely crazy. So all those things really are fascinating, you know. So really it wasn't really political. It's all about the story behind the story. It's about forgotten people and things, you know. And I love the fact that everybody talks about celebrities, everybody talks about famous people, everybody forgets the ordinary person.
Yeah.
The wee woman next door, if you actually delve into her life, it's incredible. But nobody's really doing that, you know.
Could I open it up just a wee bit? Is anyone would like to ask Jimmy a question other than me? I'm conscious that when you get stuck into something like this, you know, this is an open forum, and it's not just for me to interpret these photos.
Uh-huh. And very much inspiration comes from his mum, actually, but, you know, I took artistic license, and I think I would love to sit and have coffee with you and mm-hmm. get some of these stories.
Sure, yeah, no problem at all.
Just because, uh-huh. you know, I think that you could actually speak to people in theatre and mm-hmm. bring it at many levels, these stories, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
comedy, but
yeah.
Like you're saying, there's all these stories, and I see lots of potential for theatre pieces.
Definitely. Do you know what's lovely? You know what's lovely too? If you have total strangers go in and look at the picture, everybody brings their own wee thing to the
exactly.
picture.
Yeah.
And they talk about it. And I used to do a thing. I did a show, 30 Years of Ulster Interiors, a few years ago in Place. And I had a competition as a print for the best comments. And there was a few people who wrote fictional stories of what they believed happened. And they really totally blew me away. They were really very, very interesting, and that's something that happens. There's a thing that I love as well. I don't like to, like, if you go into an interior, say, I don't like to move things around because, you know, it becomes false. It's not real. There's a big problem now about this. But I'm in love with that idea that Truman Capote first started it with his book In Cold Blood. They call it faction. So what it is you've got the truth, but the truth is missing bits, and they put in some fiction. So it's not fiction or truth, it's faction. And photography really opens itself to that, but it's very dangerous because, like, one of the questions you were talking about is truth. Photography's slippery, truth's slippery. The whole thing moves about. But what you're saying, the people bring themselves, you know, bring something to the pictures. And theatre, I think, is perfect for that, yeah? It's very good that way.
Mm-hmm. One time I was on Northern Ireland and I discovered this house. It's completely overgrown. And I visited it twice. The first time uh-huh. I had missed a room. I didn't realize it was a room. Mm-hmm. It was so overgrown. And I went in and there was a wardrobe. There was coats hanging in the wardrobe. The Sunday go to meeting, the suit was in the wardrobe. And the shoes were. And I was totally creeped out by that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Although I met somebody mm-hmm. on the ferry going home and I found out it was a story and that was really nice, but you know, I was just living with the feeling of doing that and I'm wondering,
right.
are you ever visited by the person that's left? And you see, uh-huh. I love seeing what they leave behind, mm-hmm. but
Well, it doesn't. You see, I'm a bit funny that way. I charge in like an old bull. I just go. I see something and I go for it. But I've had people with me on occasions and stuff. And I did a workshop in Istanbul in one of the old madam's brothel and where the corset came from. And I had a lot of, you know, kids 18, 19. And we were going in to do a photographic workshop. And someone says, "Oh no, no, genies, ghosts." You know, "Oh no, no," you know, and. Then I realized, hold on, not everybody likes this, not everybody wants to do this. But it's like, for me, there is something, because most of the time I like to be, believe it or not, quite quiet and be on my own and absorb the space. And there is a vibe, a vibration or something. And sometimes there's some places you go into and you just go, no, walk straight out, forget it. But there's other places that really have a feel about them and you don't really want to leave. It's that vibe. And that, there's something going on there. I don't know how you would explain it. But for me, the photography is about that as well. I'll even talk away when I'm taking pictures of my own. I'll have the camera and the tripod, and I'll be, you know, talking as if somebody's there. Nobody there. If anybody's seen me, they would lock me up. They would lock me up. But it is. But the really good places have that, you know, with a little lot of things. You get a real impression who lived there.
Yes, I think yeah. Everything, you know, but I think
that
whenever it came down to the really seeing this person, the personal effects.
Yeah. And sometimes personal effects, you see some nasty things or nasty people. I'd started collecting old pictures, you know, from family albums. I've been doing this for a while. And I remember I got one in Turkey and it was a lovely little family and it had writing in the back. And I asked somebody to translate it and the father had died and the son had written in the back a note to the father. And I can't repeat what he said, but it was really about the father, how nasty. So sometimes it's not all that nice little world. And there's also romanticism about people living in a wee cottage with some pizza. It's not very nice. You have to break the bucket in the morning with the ice to get, you know. So there is romanticism linked to it all, but it, to me it is fascinating, those items. The story, you build a picture of the people. So it's very seductive. It's like a movie, really.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask about, you know, you're talking about ways of saying, I think sometimes it's about understanding what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I remember I worked here at the museum some years ago and then brought in a whole selection of old, like, my photographs. And she was saying, "Oh, look, the place is beautiful, and, you know, children, this photograph of this child and the child sleeping." And, you know, it's very, she sounds like romantic, I guess, but no, actually, dead.
Right, Well, there is a thrill or a buzz. Like, I photograph, like, I find if I don't photograph for a while, I need to get out to get the buzz. You know, it's about getting that. But I know what you mean about seeing. You know, it's very strange because it's like coming from Balamina, being in Istanbul, going around the streets, dealing with people, you're very aware you're seeing things very differently. And I'm quite hard in a way because, you know, a few years ago, there was a Greek photographer, and he says, "Jimmy, you know, what you're not doing with people is you need to get closer. You need to twist the knife. You need to go really in close." So sometimes you're behind the camera, you're going into these people, and you're almost forgetting who they are and who you are, and you can get lost in that. It's very dangerous because you can lose sight of what the big picture is, really. It is quite seductive in that way. But I think, you know, it's like the way people see, everybody sees something differently. And everybody brings their own thing to it. And some people don't want to see. There's a lovely movie by Slavoj Zizek, the philosopher, Guide to Ideology. And at the start of it, he shows you somebody who finds these glasses where they can see everything really as it is. And they want to show their friends through the glasses, and the friends fight with them because they don't want to see. And it's a bit like that in a way. There's people who want to see and there's people who don't want to see. And photography is very like that as well. But the old photographs are quite dangerous in that way. You know, family snaps are quite dangerous in that way. You can look at them and look at them and you can see all sorts of things that really aren't supposed to be read into. You know, it's fun.
It's interesting. There's, sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I have, because I think it's part of what photography is about. I remember one time in the year 2000, I was in New York, and just the year before the Twin Towers thing. And I remember I always loved to use the rollies. I like to use film. And whenever you load up a rollie, you get 12 shots in the roll. And I would usually turn it and reel it on, and I accidentally took a shot just when I wound it on with the lens facing up, and I never thought about it. And when I got home and I developed the prints, there was this, like, you know, in New York, there's these traffic lights that hang over and in the skyscrapers, and it was actually not a bad picture, but it was just like the camera went off, you know, like, so again, but people don't tell you that. They say, oh yeah, well I, you know, but photography is full of accidents. There's sometimes they're spooky. I remember I did a series of concentration camps, and I was in one called Braindonk in Belgium, and I photographed this place. It was a wee table with enamel bowls at the end of the place where all the bunks were. And I developed the pictures, and when I developed the pictures, the negatives had touched in the developer and almost burned a chemical hole just where somebody was sitting. You know, and you're going, spooky, you know. But photography's full of that. It's full of all that type of thing. And there's blind photographers. There's a club of people who are blind, and they photograph by smell or by... So photography is a bit like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's something in that as well, because say if you want to do this picture of this jug and glasses, and you know all the rules about photography, and you set it up, and you take the picture, it just doesn't look right because it's too perfect. You have to, like, you know, throw that unknown quantity in there. Like sometimes when I'm doing still life, just throw the things and see how they land. This goes into an argument. I'm digressing a wee bit, but see, when you're making a book, I used to go mad about how do you put the order of the pictures in the book, because I couldn't see, you know, my own pictures. And you're getting people to edit, and they say that one goes there, that one goes there. I spoke to a man who did this, and he said, there's a great Japanese photographer, Dario Moriani, and you know what he does? He gets a stack of prints and he throws them up in the air, and then he picks them up. That's how all his books are done. And people go, wow, how did you do that? That's his editing process. So he leaves it to chance, you know. So sometimes chance is lovely. It's nice.
Is there anyone else wants to look?
And gunfire. And I recognised it from less than a year ago when I was busy driving on Shelton Street. Now, this one builds the campus much longer before the masterpiece is completed.
Right, right. Well, I think the masterpiece has been completed and they've kept on going. They didn't know when to stop. That's the problem, I think, you know. But it is strange. When I was teaching at a few of the universities there, and we had a situation last year where actually the police were on campus tear gassing. And I was trying to stay a bit out of the road of it, because as a foreigner, a Yabanji, it can get very dangerous. You can just be immediately deported or whatever. People there just disappear. So I was very intrigued by it, but trying to stay out of it as well. But I got caught up in it a few times. It's not nice, but there was a few times I had to really resist the urge to take pictures. I remember one morning taking a shortcut through a little yami, a little mosque, on the way to work, and all the plainclothes police from the night before were there, just ready to go home. And I had my camera, but I knew that if I'd have lifted it, they'd have lifted me as well. So, you know, you're all these moments where you're like, you know, it's a bit like that. But it's strange. I went to a few protests that were on the edge of things. There's a lovely, not a lovely thing, but it's a very sad thing. There's mothers of all the people that have disappeared, and they meet every Saturday outside a university in Istanbul, and they carry pictures of their sons or their relatives that they've gone. Nobody knows where they are. And some of them have been doing this for years, and I've been photographing that, trying to photograph it in a sort of subtle way. And you get to know the faces, you get to know the people too. So it's very, very strange, but it's a sad way the place is going, I'm afraid to say. It is quite, there's no logic to it, and I don't know, I just find it very sad. And I have to be careful, because they see this, you know, Gilmish, the grey hair, and they see you, and you can either be the tourist, or you can be there's a Yabanji, you know, you can see, you stand out. Sometimes I wear a beanie and try and, you know, but it's not so easy. You stand out compared to them, you know, so. Of course, yeah. Have you ever heard Turkish with the Balamina accent? You know, it's not nice. You know, it's not nice. And actually, it was funny because I was teaching, and all the universities teach in English. So you're teaching like BA students in photography and film, and you know, you're going, and I, and the we, and you're going, hold on a minute, they don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, and I had to slow right down. And sometimes you have to, you say something and you go, they say, what does that mean? And you go, what does that mean? You know, you have to really think. So of this vision of some of these Turkish kids with speaking in a Balamina English, you know, it's very funny. But
I had to learn to say
trousers
and pants.
Right, trousers to... Well, they say that Declan Kilbird has a book called Reinventing Ireland, where he claims that trousers were invented in Ireland. Which is, trousers were invented in Ireland. No, I'm not, yeah, just saying, check out the book. Yes, everything, that's right. Barbed wire, everything.
Maybe I missed it, but I noticed I didn't see any children. And I'm wondering, is it not allowed to take children, or did I miss it? Is it something? Because I noticed that I've seen in the photographs.
Right.
Well, I've never seen any children now that I've
No, I haven't. Well, there's a wee girl behind you there gets a lot of attention. From my camera, but really, really the children thing, I have been taking pictures of a lot of the children. You see, if you go into some of the like Fenner Ballot areas, you get gypsy families squat, and it's lovely because the kids don't watch TV or play with the computers, they haven't the money, and they play street games, and they play in the streets, and I have done a lot of that, but I didn't put them in this, but I was trying to avoid what I call the runny nose school of photography. You know, kids were runny noses, and you know, and some of them are really, you know, very innocent, lovely kids. I find some of the people, some of the families that don't have any, they're the nicest people. They'll bring you in for a cup of tea. The rich neighborhoods know very, you know, whereas the nicest people I met out there were the gypsies, you know, because, and it is lovely because they are playing with chalk and they're swinging of the, you know, they're playing. And it's really nice, but it's this very, very awkward thing, you know. Some of them, you know, you want to give them either money or give them something, and it's a strange. What I would usually do, some of the families, they don't have any pictures, don't have any cameras. I would take their picture, come back a week later, give them the picture. They're not expecting to ever see you again. They're really, it's like Christmas when they just get a picture of themselves, because they don't have any. They don't have anything like that. But it's quite a harsh environment, but I did like the fact that, you know, the kids are making do. They're making things, you know. But yeah, I have a lot of them. And it's a strange place because people let the kids run loose. They let them run out. And you go into schoolyards and photograph kids. You can't do that here, you know, as well. But it is a problem because I remember I used to love the kids there wear an old blue uniform. It's like a blue with a wee lace collar. very nice, very, you know, handmade, lovely. They've sort of stopped that in the last year. And I was trying to do a lot of pictures. And I remember I did a picture. I went into a schoolyard and there was a lot of girls with blue uniform. And one didn't. She was left out. And I did a wee group. And they posed. They're like all posing like angels. And I put it up on Flickr. And I got a load of hits. And then I realized why I was getting a lot of hits. Because it was like the pedophiles or whatever looking. So you've got all this. You know, so you have, you're treading a thin line all the time, but they're still quite naive with that. They haven't really done that yet. They haven't been misfortunate enough for that yet with the big population. But even though you can have 9-year-olds can be married, it's crazy too, you know. There's all that stuff going on. But really for me, I didn't put it in this because it's undeclared, people that don't exist. You know, that's why I kept out of this. But on my Flickr, there's lots of the kids, you know. You know, so fun.
Does anyone else want to ask a question at all? Well, maybe we'll...
I was going to say, well, I saw where Johnny Yates captured the essence of Istanbul, you know.
Right, thanks, Wyatt.
As a work of art.
Right, Yeah. Well, it's like I sort of continue what I was doing here, and I will be back at the end of the year. But I suppose for me, it's funny because it is that Balamina thing going forward through. And there's a very strange thing here. It's funny the way we're talking here, because you could fill this place in Istanbul and you say, any questions? No. People don't talk. They don't talk like we do. But there's a biggest impression thing that hit me in Istanbul was negative space. If you go there, there's no empty space. Everything has a scroll or something on it. Here, you'll get big areas where there's nothing. And here, it means quality or luxury or give it space to breathe. But their part of the culture is, you'll actually see this in the people as well. They don't leave any space at all. They put something decorative in. Quite interesting, actually. And when I was teaching out there, the whole way they look visually is very different as well. It's a cultural thing. And it's even a religious thing with Islam. It's a bit like that too. A lot of the calligraphy and that work.
Is there a photograph that... I was talking recently to a Japanese, or a fellow from Ireland who had married a Japanese woman. And I'd asked him, have you ever fallen out with your wife over something that wasn't personal, but that was cultural? And he said, I did. He said, because it was our son's birthday and I bought him a watch. And I said, you can take that watch to school and show it to your mates. And his wife is Japanese, said, no, you're not doing that. That's a form of showing off or one-upmanship in a primary school in Japan. So, you know, and they fell out over it. But he said the difference wasn't, it was because of their different cultural backgrounds, values, if you like.
Yeah.
I guess why I bring this up is there a photograph that would be easy to take in Turkey that wouldn't be easy to take here, or a photograph that would be very difficult to take in Turkey but that would be easy to take here?
There is. I think, again, it comes down to the people. You know, the people. Of course, you've got things like with interiors, you've got the light is different. The light here is a very sharp blue light, whereas there you get more of it, more shadows and all. But here you get all that rain and you get the overcast. But it's lovely, very, very nice. You only appreciate it when you go away. But with the people is the real big difference. The people there won't. There's a thing in Istanbul they call huzun. It's a very old tradition. And what it means is, if you've had bad luck, you've lost your family, lost your house, whatever, a lot of the homeless people, this is why they accept you photographing them, because they accept that it's just like their bad misfortune. They accept it. They don't go, well, you know, I've had a, you know, whatever, why did this happen to me? They go, look, it's happened to me. Okay. And that's why they let you take the picture of them easier than here. You couldn't do that so easy here. You don't see people lying on the street here. But also, if I went down the street now today, I could take a lot of pictures, but somebody would go, delete that, don't take that, you know, oh, I'm in the dole, you're going, you know all that there sort of thing. They're suspicious, or they don't want you to. Whereas there, they totally accept it. And they know what you're doing a lot of the time. The only people I've had really objecting to me out there are like tourists or security guards, but that Hazan, it's called Hazan, it's an acceptance. And they say that this comes from the Byzantine era, whenever the empire collapsed, that people accepted it and they get on with it. So you get really rich people, millionaires, with, like they have a lot of maids and chauffeurs and things who, they all get on very easily. They accept their position, whereas here you never get that. Very rarely do you get that happening, that people accept that, you know, they're down and out, you know. So, yeah, that would be the biggest thing. The people, really, it comes down to cultural again.
I remember once I was in Turkey and I was staying in a village near Ephesus, and I think just in terms of these photographs, there's something comes back to me, which is at night you could hear kind of tinsmiths still working with their kind of hammers, and as I walked back to where I was staying, there's a guy running a wee tiny hotel there, Metin, and he was, as you say, it would have been a very wealthy man. He dealt in Turkish carpets to the Pope and the Kennedys and these kind of people. But a very humble man as well. And I remember him saying to me, I said, do you have a philosophy? And he said, yeah, I do, actually. He said, my philosophy is the same as the guy who lived across the bay there, Heraclitus. And Heraclitus was 2,000 years dead, but it sounded like he was talking about someone that was sitting next to him. And he said, the philosophy is just nothing endures but change. Accept it. And in this weird kind of way, I think it bears out something that you're indicating that's maybe in the Turkish people.
Yeah, it's in there, yeah. Also, what you said about the noise, when you go there, the smells and the noise are very different. Like, the thing that I still haven't got used to is the call to prayer. In the morning, about 5 in the morning, it goes on. And you never totally get used to it. Very funny story. When I started one of the universities, there was a guy from New Zealand. And he started teaching at the university. And when he heard the call in the morning, he ran into the street in his underpants. He thought there was an earthquake. And they said to him, no, this is the call. So everybody knows him by that story. You know, so the sounds can be very, what the heck's that? Yeah. But the sounds and smells are incredible. You know, if you go down to the spice markets, the smells hit you, all sorts of smells. So it can be very good, very, very good, but also very hard to get used to.
And maybe I'll round up now with my last question, just is, and it comes out of a question you were asking about photography and death. Again, my own life, about 5 years ago, my wife died and one of her friends arrived when she was in the coffin and started photographing her. And that created in me a very, very strange feeling, because obviously what he was dealing with was his way of the Victorians keeping something alive that was no longer there. I was aware that on my wife's side of the family, that would be a kind of vast intrusion, a kind of form of voyeurism that was beyond the social norm. So you have a difficulty in what's photographed, but my question isn't so much really coming out of that story. It's more about if you were you say that when we started this conversation that there's certain objects that appeal to you, certain kind of things from the past. If you were like the Egyptians to take a photograph with you into the afterlife, which photographer or photograph would it be?
Right. Well, it's something that I thought about a few times. Also, Pamela is much missed, an incredible woman. And to talk about that first, I think in photography, like in life, there's a thing called respect and attitude. And I think there's a sort of line there. And I don't know, it would be interesting to ask them why they did that or what that was about, but I think respect and attitude, it comes into that. I think, if somebody is like that, I think they have to think of the bigger picture first. But going back to the what would I take with me, It's funny, I used to work years ago, I used to manage Cameron's bookshop down here, and there was a man come in and he used to buy Western novels. John Wayne was his hero. And his wife and him came in every Saturday afternoon. And then I hadn't seen them for a while, and she came in and she said, "Oh, he's dead, he died." And I went, "Oh, sorry to hear it." And she said, "You know, he got buried with a picture of John Wayne. They put John Wayne in the coffin, you know." So I went, right, okay, you know. And I sort of thought about it, you know, I laughed at the start, but then I thought, you know, what was that all about? But then the question there is interesting. I find that for me, the answer would be, it would have to be an emotional connection. And I've been looking at family snaps lately, and sometimes just not even great photographs, but just the family snaps, there's an emotional thing going on. So it would have to be a picture that's not a great photographer, but an emotional connection. And that would be okay. But of course it would have to be archival. It would have to last longer than me, you know.
Listen, thank you all so much for coming along. I want to thank the centre here for inviting me. And I want to say that these photographs will reward you. I have two photographs of Jimmy's from way back in my own house. And I've looked at those photographs probably more than I've looked at most living human beings in the last 20 years. So the photography does have an afterlife. It does have a...
There's a story in there.
It has a story, yeah. And just to say that I really, really thought that was an extraordinary exhibition, and good to be in Ballymena as well, and thank you.
I would like to thank John for coming. We have a lot to catch up on, haven't seen him for a while. He's been a friend for half a lifetime, very valuable friend. And Jane, thank you for making this happen, and thank you for coming. It's been a real pleasure. I'll be around. Ask me questions, whatever. Check it out. So hope you enjoy. Thank you.